Blog Talk Radio.
With the economy down, it's amazing how not working can shine light on what you're working with. Dark times need enlightenment. We gotta wake up, open the blinds, pull back the covers, and get from under what's not important. No more inflated values, missed priorities, or irreconcilable divorces. Love is in need of assistance, so we need to change the system and redefine where the wealth is. Saving Wall Street don't mean nothing if we can't pay attention to what's relevant. Us, the state of you and me is in need of more stimulation than economics. We need more investments and spiritual kisses and more intimacy between partners. You see, money is backed by gold currently, but that real currency is making this house a home for you and me, backed by what we do and how I love and respect you. Loan modifications are for houses, but there's no foreclosures on this home. We own this, no loan on this. You're my 401k, my retirement. Everything I own invested in your feelings, wide awake and sleeping with my future on this. It'll take more than a depression to hold down elevated consciousness. I just play the kindred souls everywhere, able to bear witness and feel this.
Well, good evening and welcome once again, brothers and sisters, to the PR Table. I'm one of your hosts, Brother Dunlap, and we welcome all of you back who have been and sat down with us at the table before. And for those of you who this is your first time, just sit back and relax. We just hope and pray that you're going to have just an exciting episode along with us. So just to go right into the show tonight, I think Brother Feaster is ready to go off the blocks. I think Sister Dia is ready to do what she does. So as we continue on this road of economic recovery, we want everybody to know this show is a continuation of the last three shows. The first show was Set Your House in Order. The other one was From Shutdown to Recovery. And the third one was How to Recover Economically. So this is the fourth show that we've been on this era, on this, whatever you want to call it, about setting your house in order and dealing with the economic recovery and the shutdown and all of that. So if you stay tuned to anything that happened and you missed any of these shows, we're going to provide the information to you so that you can have the links to those shows and listen to them through the archives of Blog Talk Radio. So tonight's title of tonight's show is Economic Recovery Together, and I thank Brother Feaster for helping us get that together, because I couldn't figure out quite what was the name of the title that we need to bring to the show. And the focus of tonight's show, everybody, is how can we do this thing together? How can we do it as a church? How can we do it as a community? I know that it is a must, so we're just going to run from that. As we get ready for our conversation and dialogue, let me welcome Sister Adia. Sister Adia has the sweet sound of the PRF table, but make no mistake about it, she's like a stick of dynamite. If you just don't watch out, you know, she'll just explode on you. So, cousin, are you on the line with us? Mm-hmm. All right, I don't think she's with us. Brother Feaster, how are you doing this evening?
Well, I'm going to tell you, after last week's show, I've been sitting and meditating and just doing some serious thinking about some of the things we talked about last week and how I was confronted with your last closing question. And that's what prompted me to tonight's show and how we would title the show and the direction we were going. So I am ready. Don't know where I'm ready at or where this is going, but I am ready. I am ready.
We're glad to hear that. And for those of you who weren't with us last week we were asking really a larger question. And that larger question was, you know, where do we begin on this road to economic recovery? And in that larger question, that larger framework, it was placed on our hearts that we have to really move from just having conversation, which conversation is good, it's a good start, but we have to go from that place to a place where you, the listeners, can actually hear practical applications, where you, whether it's your church, where you are able to see and get an answer to the questions about where do we begin. You know, are we going on with church business as usual, as we've talked about? Are we doing business as usual because there's no fear there anymore about not getting a paycheck? You know, what's next for your church? What needs to be put in place? I was talking to a brother today at work, and the brother had not listened to the show, but he's listened to the show before, and he said the same thing. He said, I was telling my wife that even though this economic or this government shutdown is over, and she understands it, we were just having that conversation, and he was telling me that him and his wife were talking about, you know, it's not over. the same thing that we've been talking about on this show. It's not over. So hopefully we're just going to just continue to deal with it. And Brother Feaster, I think it was you after last week's show, as you just mentioned, really, you were at that place of, I believe, asking God and asking yourself, you know, what do we do next? How do we ignite? I think this is what you said back to me. How do we ignite? How do we encourage? How do we empower? Or whatever it is, the churches to come together. So I'm going to turn the mic over to you, my brother, and let you just start off. And before I do that, anybody who wants to join into the conversation, press 1 on your phone. And if you're listening by phone or if you're following us on Facebook, post your questions or your comments, and we'll get to you. So, Brother Feaster, you know, you said that we left you off at that particular place, so we just want you to pick it up and just start running with it.
Yeah, this is the one time where I didn't want to listen to the show from last week. And the main reason why I didn't want to listen to the show from last week, I wanted to just let the last comment, the last question that you had stirring in my heart and in my mind, I wanted it to just continue to resound within me, because if I had to listen to the show, I would have heard some other things, and it might have changed how I was feeling. So I just wanted to just let that one question, and what's been on my mind all week is, you know, you kept saying, as long as we continue to do this thing individually, you know, I don't remember how you said it, but the way I took it is, as long as we continue to do this thing individually, then we will never collectively come to a resolution. And that hit me hard. It hit me real hard because I began to think, you know, a lot of times, and let me talk about me. I'm not going to talk about a lot of people a lot of times, but I know me. If you won't help me, then I'm going to help myself. I'm going to go find where I can get the help, who I can get the help, and I'm going to make it happen. I'm going to do what I need to do. But with that individualistic mentality, I'm out there by myself with myself, and I'm pushing uphill. I don't have a problem with that. But why do I have to push uphill alone? What do I mean by that? Well, I heard an old cliche, and if I say this wrong, forgive me, but this is the way I remember it. I heard an old cliche say that one horse can pull 4,000 pounds, but two horses can pull 6,000 pounds. And the reason why I wanted to bring that up is, by myself, I can carry a heavy load. But with somebody equal to me, I'm not carrying double the load. I'm carrying quadruple the load. The Bible even says that one can chase 1,000, but two can chase 10,000. So all that stuff hit in my head and in my heart and in my mind, because I began to think, I can do more with more. I can do a lot by myself, but I can do more with more. If I go with somebody, if I go talk to somebody and we go together, that makes a big difference. That makes a big difference. And as I begin to think about the churches and our role and our responsibility, my question is it the church's responsibility to be an independent individual organism? And my answer to that is no. It's never been God's intent for First Baptist, Second Baptist, Deliverance Outreach, the Supernatural Apostolic Church, none of these churches to be independently led and function of itself. Even all these denominations, and I have an understanding of denominations, I have a respect for denominations, I understand why a lot of them were made. But if we continue to stovepipe our relationship with God, we are doing God an injustice. God did not stovepipe his relationship with man. For example, when he went to, if I remember correctly, when he went to Bethany, he talked to a Samaritan, which him as a Jew, Jesus could not talk to according to the law. It was considered disrespectful and a disgrace to talk to somebody that was a Samaritan. But if Jesus had stovepiped his relationship with mankind, he would have only talked to the Jews. And I'm going to go bold and say this. If Jesus had a stovepipe his relationship with mankind and only talked to the Jews, I wouldn't be a Christian because I'm not a Jew. I didn't grow up in a Jew. I didn't grow up in a Jewish community.
That's
so
right.
Because he didn't stovepipe his relationship with mankind, why are we stovepiping our relationship with God and through Jesus? Why are we doing that? So we as churches that are doing our individual thing, we may be doing great things for the community. We may be doing great things for society. We may be doing great things in God. And I chose that word for a reason. We might be doing great things in God, but are we doing great things for God? I remember watching Malcolm X, the Spike Lee movie, and I remember when he was going into the Capitol building. Malcolm X was going into the Capitol building, and this white lady walked up to him, and this is the video clip now. The white lady walked up to him and said, "I support your cause. I believe in your cause. I want to help your cause. What can I do for your cause?" And because she was a white woman, he looked her in the face and said, "You can't do anything."
Mm.
With that mentality, I use that as an example. With that mentality, we are creating, we are funding our own genocide. I'm saying some bold stuff here, and I'm not taking any of it back, because that stovepipe mentality is going to create us to be self-gods. They're going to create us to be self-employed, just thinking that it's all about me. And when you peel away the skin, we all have one heart, two lungs, two kidneys, one brain, one spine, a rib cage, the same amount of bones, male, female. When you peel away the skin, when you peel away the denomination, if we are serving the same God, why can't we come together? I have much respect, and I was in Killeen, Texas. Once a year, they would have a tri-city revival, and they would bring in three cities, all of the denominations, and have a revival. It would go from different church to different church and different denominations, and the denomination and a church that hosted it was not the denomination and a church that was the preacher. So you may have a Baptist, and this is the year I remember, it was a Baptist church that was hosting it, but it was a Kojic preacher, and his church was the one that was leading the service. I have so much respect and still have so much respect for that, because that tells me that despite our differences, despite our disagreements, despite the things that I think you may feel is wrong and whatever the case may be, I'm going to put them aside. And all I'm going to worry about right now is edifying the body of Christ. And that's the kind of stuff that's been resounding in my heart and in my mind all week as I thought about stuff like that. If we continue to stovepipe our relationship with God, we are doing God an injustice. We're doing God a disjustice. And just like with this economic situation, if we as the church, the individual church, the body of Christ, but the Bible has many and many and many stories over and over again of when the people came together as one, and the people couldn't be stopped. So just think about what we're doing now individually, and imagine how much more we can do if we unify. So, JR, my question tonight is, and what I want to know, is how can I, as an individual right now, not an active member of an active body of Christ here in the city that I'm in, how can I make a change? How can I prepare, not myself, because I prepare, but how can I prepare those around me for what's going to happen in less than 90 days? And if we don't get to that answer tonight, I just thank God that at least we've opened the door and sparked the mind so that people can begin to think about it, and maybe somebody will speak it to somebody, and we find the right person in the right place with the right connection to do the right thing. But I'm going to stop right there because I'm getting worked up. But that's just where I'm at tonight. As long as we continue to stovepipe this thing, we're doing a disjustice and an injustice to what God's intent was and what God's plan was for the church. It's not about Baptist. It's not about Kojic. It's not about Church of God. It's not about even the, you know, now the independent, no, the non-denomination little church is now becoming a denomination. So even in all of that, I mean, we've got to stop all this stovepiping, and we've got to destroy the stovepipe and let our spillage spill so that we can come together. One last thing, the movie Volcano, the one thing, and if you're not paying attention, this only lasts for a split second. The movie Volcano, I think that's the name of it, the movie Volcano was about a volcano that pushed through the city of New York and began to erupt in New York. And the townspeople, the people of New York, was trying to stop the lava from destroying the city. And they finally stopped the lava. But if you know anything about volcanoes, there's the volcanic ash that falls down on everybody. And if you're not paying attention to that movie, if you blink, you turn your head and go get a cup of coffee, you're going to miss the one scene where the volcanic ash landed on everybody, and everybody looked the same. So my prayer tonight is that volcanic ash would land on everybody tonight, and we all look the same and end up with the same purpose in mind. I'm stopping right there, Gerald.
My question is, are you sure? I really don't want to stop you if you're not done.
Well, you know I'll never finish. I just pause and go get some water. I'm never finished. I got so much more. It's just I don't know.
Well, let me say this. One of the things that you said, Brother Feaster, I have mad respect for you. The thing that you said about when you were in Killeen and that Tri-City Revival, to me that gives a very good example of the fact that we can do. Now, in your sermon to us a minute ago, you said we about 3,422 times. And I think you've set the foundation of the thing that I'm going to talk about tonight, because there are a lot of people that are doing this collective that you talked about, that you want to get to. The question is for all of us in our own individual communities, though, is what are we seeing as a collective? Because, see, we don't want to speak that out into the atmosphere as if nobody's doing anything. I think what's important is for us to be able to speak about who is doing something. And you talk, I can't remember exactly, I know you were trying to get it, but when you were saying something earlier, it reminded me of this, something that Solomon said, a twofold cord is strong, but a threefold cord is not easily broken. So that's another biblical example or a passage of scripture. You don't even have to call it a passage of scripture. The truth is the truth. It is valid. It is something that we know we can hold on to. We know that there's strength in numbers. At the end of the day, it's really up to us. It's really up to us. And let me tell you where I'm at. Let me tell you where I'm at this week. When you made your point last week about, you know, the pastor, the minister, or leader that, you know, when you were talking, you said, hey, it's my responsibility to take care of my people first. You know, I'm going to tell you, it gave me a lot of pause because, you know, for me, I don't believe or I couldn't see that is the Jesus way. That's God's way. I couldn't see it as you were saying it. But the thing that I can do is accept the fact that that may be the mindset of a lot of believers. Maybe the reason that it gave me some pause, maybe it raised the hairs on the back of my neck up, was because there's a lot of truth in what you actually said. Maybe the statement is part of some core of why leadership in my community, again, I'm just speaking about my community, has the voids or the voids that are in my community that needs to be filled. And it took me, and this is one of the things I thought about earlier this week, and if anybody's on the line and is ready to jump in and sit down at the table, have anything you want to bring in, please do. But I thought about the land of Canaan. If you go back to the book of Deuteronomy, God spoke to the Israelites for a long time before he allowed them to enter into the promised land, before they conquered, before they dwelled there, before they occupied. He gave them a lot of instructions. And those 12 tribes that entered and occupied and settled in that land of Canaan was big, but they were all in their individual locations within the one land. And there was one thing. This takes me back to that one item agenda that we talked about, or I talked about last week. God actually told them, every year, all of you tribes, bring your tithes to one location. And then he gives them some other instructions in how to use the tithes when they got to that one location. And if they were not able to bring the tithes because they weren't just bringing money, they were bringing food and agriculture, they were bringing those type of things to that one central place, which may have been too far for some. So God gave them instructions on that. But that reminded me, Brother Feaster, of that one item agenda. I don't think I can get away from that one item agenda. And let me tell you what I started thinking about today, and it really just came to me. I remember back in September, so about almost 2 months ago, the U.S. Conference of Mayors had a panel discussion in Birmingham. They actually had it at the 16th Street Baptist Church, and if you remember anything about the 16th Street Baptist Church, is where some of our children were killed and murdered back in the 1960s. In Birmingham, Alabama. And let me tell you who was there at this this panel discussion. It was the New Orleans mayor, Mayor Mitch Landrieu. It was my mayor of Philadelphia, Mayor Nutter. It was the mayor of Madison, Wisconsin, Paul Soglin. The mayor from Tacoma, Washington, Marilyn Strickland. And then Kevin Johnson, and I don't know if anybody knows or remembers who Kevin Johnson is, but Kevin Johnson used to play basketball, point guard, for the Phoenix Suns with Charles Barkley. And let me read a couple of statements to you that came from the state, which is a Republican, which is a South Carolina's homepage, but we know South Carolina's a Republican state. And the mayor, or a former president of the mayor's conference, said this. He said he would hope that the plan would gain wide support and make a difference in the U.S. cities. So what they were doing, they were coming to deal with reaching out, reaching economic justice. That's what their whole purpose for coming together was. And he said this, and I quote, "I would think that eventually a few hundred mayors will sign on because it's something that mayors of all political persuasions are committed to." He said, "We're right there with the people. Our work is not in the abstract." So you have some leaders that are already committed to this thing of economic justice, which is tied right into what we're talking about on this road to economic recovery. Let me tell you what Mayor Strickland said from Washington. You can have freedom and a job and still be in chains. Let me tell you what my mayor said. He said, "This is a problem that needs to be addressed. If people are wandering around just wondering what to do with themselves, unfortunately, they will get in trouble again." And let me read this last statement from what Mayor Johnson said. And he was in the pulpit when I heard this. He said, "We as a country have made great progress since then, but we still have much to do." And that's the vantage point that I really want us to really focus on. We know that there's a lot of stuff to do, but we have made some progress. We have to celebrate the progress. We have to talk about what are the things that actually have been done. What are the accomplishments that have come about so far? Because we can't get to a point of celebrating the big picture when we don't even recognize the small pictures that are right there in front of our face. And when I heard Mayor Johnson say this, I think it was somebody that was in the church that made a question or asked a question to the leaders that was there and said, it was something, "What are y'all going to do? What are you doing in your own community?" And I think that was a very valid question for them to say, "What are you doing in your own community?" And the thing that he talked about was giving one day where all of the churches in the city gave one day once a year to one specific thing. Again, it goes back to a one-item agenda. And I don't want to monopolize the time, and I really want to make sure that I get Sister Adia in, so I'm hoping that she's back on the line before I go into this.
He told me.
I don't know if she's on the line right now. Sister Adia, are you with us? All right. We'll wait till she comes back in. This may take a little while, so I wanted to make sure that I gave her an opportunity to jump on because I know she'll have to jump off in a little while. What I really want to do, I want everybody just to really listen to this article, and it's not long, But the title of it, this comes from off rosemont.patch.com, and patch.com is just a blog out of New York. Give One Day aims to raise $250,000 to help homelessness in Sacramento. So Mayor Johnson is the mayor of Sacramento. Homelessness is a citywide problem that plagues even the smallest Sacramento communities. On any given night, nearly 2,600 people in the Sacramento County are homeless, a 7.6% increase since 2011. The number of homeless families have increased an alarming 47.5% since 2009. That's why this afternoon, Sacramento Mayor Kevin Johnson will join Pastor Rick Cole of Capitol Center and Bishop Sherwood Carton from Bayside of South Sacramento to share the details about a major fundraising effort. And I've already reached out to them, and hopefully we can get one of them or somebody representing either one of these congregations on the show next week. But the whole, this one-item agenda, y'all, is called Give One Day, and it's aimed to help end homelessness in Sacramento by asking people to donate one day's worth of their rent or mortgage. Brother Feaster, that's a lot. Funds raised from Give One Day will support programs to help move families and individuals into permanent housing as rapidly as they are ready. Their programs targeted for youths ages 14 to 24, training and job placement and transitioning the Winter Sanctuary Program into a year-long emergency or a year-round emergency shelter to provide a safe haven every night of the year. It says the most vulnerable members of our community, people with chronic and mental physical health issues, and those families trying to obtain and maintain employment while supporting their children have been impacted by dwindling public resources. And this was September. Sacramento Steps Forward, which is a private nonprofit organization, is issuing a community-wide call to join together to ensure all Sacramentians have a place to call home. Sacramento Steps Forward. You know what's amazing? And Brother Fisa, I'll let you comment. This is not the church, but the church was involved. $250,000. So when Mayor Johnson was asked that question from the pulpit, when he was asked that question, he already had a response. What have we been talking about over the last couple of weeks? The government shutdown is over.
Right.
But what are we going to do to put ourselves into a position? So what I'm believing is that is a perfect example of what we can do. And you may not be able to do it like that in your individual or particular community, but there is something like that that can happen. But please, go ahead. I'm done. I just wanted to put it out there because I think we can talk about something like this. Again, what I'm looking at is how can we do what you said, Brother Feaster? How can we give somebody a starting point? How can we start this conversation where you can take this, you who are listening, and do something in your own community instead of just talking about it? And I'm done.
Well, you left me holding the bag because I don't have that answer. I don't have that answer, and that's what I'm hoping. And please, if anybody out there has an answer, or better yet, someone who they know that is trying to come up with a solution or something like that, please press one and let us know, because that, for me, that would be success tonight. And I feel successful after probably 99% of the shows that we've had since. Oh, JR, do you know we're coming up on a year, ain't it? Didn't we start in November last year?
December. We're almost there, brother, almost there.
But, yeah, I would love for somebody to come on. And because, JR, this is one thing you've done for me. You've got me to the point to where we can always talk about the problems, because everybody's talking about the problems. But until we begin to talk about the solutions, then we're part of the problem. And so, that's been my prayer all week. That has been my prayer all week. I mean, I stopped. Granted, I got a lot of stuff going on at work right now, and it's consuming a lot of my time. But I have not been on Facebook for a whole week now, well, since Tuesday, because I wanted to hear. I wanted to just listen. I wanted to let my mind digest and come up with some solutions, some answers, not only to this but a couple other things. But this is one of the things. So you left me holding the bag, and the only thing I can say is for me, a possible solution would be going out and maybe trying to talk to somebody, but that leaves me still where I am. You know, where do I go? Where do I talk? I like what you just read. I love that a lot. because it shows that even before all this happened, to me, that was a forecast. To me, that was a forecast of things to come, and somebody already saw it, and then they wanted to make some changes. They was trying to prepare us. That's what it seems like to me.
You know, I'm not trying to give anybody a solution. You know, it's not about a solution. It's about a process, and it's about resolution with me. The fact that this was something that was already positioned, so if you think about it, that was back in September. When was the shutdown? October. Can you imagine if they had this scheduled for December or even November and that shutdown occurred on October 1st like it did? Don't you know that people would have probably pulled back because of the uncertainty within their own lives? Think about it. You're talking about a whole mortgage or a rent payment. And this is one thing that I think about this article. The thing that we don't see, which is what I think we don't see in this article, the thing that we don't read in the article is the relationship. We're seeing the fruits of some of the labor. And that labor was the relationship that had to be developed. And it only mentions two churches here. Two. I was preaching last Sunday, and I was talking to this particular church's gathering house here in Phoenix City, and one of the greatest things that I could say to them was, it is good to be able to get in front of a congregation and not have to preach hard about what you ain't doing. Because this particular community church is doing things in the community. It's seen in the community. They have a clothing bank. They have a food bank. They don't pay their pastors a salary. And they offer GED programs that is doing better than our community college, where the community college no longer does it and have turned it all over to this one community church that don't even have 50 members. So there's no way that I can ever accept that because of the size of your congregation that you can't do. The thing is this. This church does not do what they do, what God allows them to do, what God has called them to do. They don't do it by themselves. But there's like 13 churches on this one strip, which is about a little over a mile long. 13. Most of them do not participate, but it's other people. So when you ask the question, when you brought it up about somebody who is not an active member of a congregation, let's not even let that be an excuse. Let's not even let that be something. You have to actually, if you want something, you can go out and seek it. There's people that are doing things. I mean, think about it. Think of this. I just found this article. Now, again, I was watching the thing. I was watching it on C-SPAN, this Conference of Mayors, U.S. Conference of Mayors. I was watching it, but I was able to go online and find an article. So if we really want to do some of the things that we want to do, if we want some solutions or some answers to some of the problems or issues or concerns that we have in our community, let's be real. We can do it if we want to do it. We can do it if we want to do it. Let me tell you, but let me just go here. We participate in something in my church, and I may get in trouble, but it won't be the first time. And we participate in something called World Hunger. It's a ministry. And if you're there on Wednesday night at my church, you have the opportunity to participate in this ministry of World Hunger, which we give $1. That's how we participate. That's all that's asked for by the pastor. If you're there, and if you're a visitor and you don't want to, that's fine, or you can't, it's fine. But we're told that we participate with thousands of other churches in this effort. And I don't question the accuracy of that statement. And I don't know what any other church does, but I do know that every little bit helps for this global cause, right? And let me say this. I'm not trying to change this because I know our pastor feels very, very strong about it. So I'm definitely going to be a follower in this effort. And I know it's important to some of the members more than others, some more than others that contribute to this because they've been doing it for years, even before I came. But the question that I asked the question about what about the local cause? As I was speaking on last Sunday, we have a homelessness problem in our community. You can see it. And then I started doing a little bit more homework or research, whatever you want to call it, just trying to find out some information about this World Hunger, because I've been participating in it for years. And they had an annual World Hunger Sunday on October 13th. Never heard of that before. But we do give this $1. Listen to this. In 2010, more than $4.5 million was given to World Hunger by the Southern Baptist Convention. $4.5 million. That's a lot of cheese. In 2011, here's what is out there available if you care to look. 5 million meals were served in North America, and it averages about 30 cents per meal, which is about $1.5 million. So you can see that the giving has increased. But there's 99,000 volunteers. There's 1,000 hunger ministry sites all around the country. Then I looked up Florida, because we're close to Florida. They gave $231,000 in 2012. But $150,000 of that was distributed to Florida churches. $263,000 people were fed. So there's people that are out there doing things if we look for it. But again, I go back to, what about the local cause? The global cause is great, but what about the local cause? And that takes us on the ground. That takes us as individuals who are front runners, whatever you want to call us, that are willing to communicate with pastors and ministries and churches and individuals in those bodies and nonprofit organizations. You know, my brother, I love him to death. I am so proud of my brother for how he is so involved in community. And one of the greatest things about my brother is this, my older brother. He doesn't seek the accolades, but they come. He's humble in what he does. And he doesn't go to church every Sunday like some of us. He doesn't go to Bible study every Wednesday like some of us. So really, it goes back to me, and maybe I'm sounding like I'm preaching. Some of it goes back to having to get out of ourselves as if it's only us as the church that is going to be able to make things happen. My brother's involved in some great and amazing things and affects children's lives and has been doing it for years. And I love you, bro, and I know he's listening. But can you imagine how much more impactful that would be if the churches in the areas where, and I'll say this, I'm saying it, where he provides a ministry of help to people in these communities that he goes into through his work, can you imagine if the churches were so much more committed to those things? It would be amazing. It will be of so large of an economic proportion, but you have to have people that's committed to doing the work. Somebody said something on Sunday about us as Christians being the hands and feet of Jesus. Well, I can tell you what, if the feet are standing still and not moving, what good are they? If the hands are not touching something to make something happen, what good are they? I'm going to a break, y'all. And when we come back, we'll see if we're going to hear from Sister Adia. We'll see if we'll hear from you. But we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. Just listen to the words of this song.
With the economy down, it's amazing how not working can shine light on what you're working with. Dark times need enlightenment. We gotta wake up, open the blinds, pull back the covers, and get from under what's not important. No more inflated values, missed priorities, or irreconcilable divorces. Love is in need of assistance, so we need to change the system and redefine where the wealth is. Saving Wall Street don't mean nothing if we can't pay attention to what's relevant. Us, the state of you and me is in need of more stimulation than economics. We need more investments and spiritual kisses and more intimacy between partners. You see, money is backed by gold currently, but that real currency is making this house a home for you and me, backed by what we do and how I love and respect you. loan modifications of our houses, but there's no foreclosures on this home. We own this, no loan on this. You're my 401k, my retirement, everything I own invested in your feelings. Wide awake and sleeping with my future on this. It'll take more than a bit of pressure to hold down elevated consciousness. I just play the kindred souls everywhere, able to bear witness and feel this.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the PIF table, and right now let me just go to Sister Adia. Sister Adia, are you with us now?
Yes, I am. Oh, I'm excited, as always.
I know you were supposed to be gone by now, but I did want to just at least offer you the opportunity just to be able to say something, whatever's on your heart, whatever you're feeling, about what we've talked about so far. I know you haven't been with us for the whole 40 minutes, but is there anything in you about, okay, what is it going to take? How can we empower somebody? How can you empower somebody? Just give us whatever you have in your heart, because you know that's what we're about on the PRF table.
Well, one thing is just basically is having a vision, and I guess the best example that I can give is that I went to a cycling class yesterday morning, and I don't ride a bike. I drive my car to work, and I walk to my class. But while we were on these stationary spin bikes, we had to turn the resistance up. And in turning the resistance up, it allows you to focus on building up your hamstrings and your quadricep muscles, or whatever those are, and your calves. And so she told us, she said, you know, we're basically, at the resistance was a hill. And so the resistance that I had on my eyes, I'm like, this is really hard. You know, I didn't want to give up, but at the same time, I knew that there was a goal in mind. And even though I wasn't riding on a real bike, on going up a real hill, the situation was just that, because of the resistance. However, I began to envision myself going up that hill and getting to the top of it. And I think that if any time we want to empower somebody, we have to have a vision. And when you have a vision, even though you may not understand all that it's going to take, there's going to be resistance. You may want to give up. You may want to stop in the middle of going up that hill. But if you can begin to see the goal, which is to get to the top of that hill, then you will begin to understand, and your body will begin to line up. And in this representation, you know, your hill or your goal, whatever it is that you're envisioning, it may start out with you. But you realize that if you've ever done any type of cycling, you understand that you're not alone. You can build a team and tackle that hill with the resistance together. And a lot of times as we go through things, we may start out alone because God has given us a vision. But as God gives us that vision, I believe that God is going to put us in a place to where we can invite other people and begin to build a team. So you may start out with the team of me or I, but I believe that God is going to send people that have that shares that same vision, that has that same passion to say, we understand that going up that hill is going to challenge us. There's going to be some people that we meet, some opposition. However, because we know that there's a goal that we're trying to reach, we are going to pull together. And I believe that's how we empower people. I was reading something in a book on last night, and it really made me look at myself differently. It really made me think about who I was, and I just want to share it. It says, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, handsome, talented, and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small doesn't serve the world. So a lot of times, and this is a quote from Marianne Williamson, a lot of times I begin to look at this and I was like, I had to read it like 3 or 4 times to really let it sink in. How many times have we had an idea about something, but then we were just like, well, I don't know. And I know I've said it because I've said it on the show and even talked to Feaster after the show and talked to Nate after the show to say, hey, I know God gave this to me, but I don't know, or I'm scared, or this.
Yeah.
But the deepest fear is not that we're inadequate, it's that we're powerful beyond our measure, and we are too sometimes scared to admit it, that I am bad to the bone, that I do have what it takes to make this whatever it is, successful. I have what it takes because I'm brilliant. I'm fabulous. I'm smart. I'm intelligent. And I know that what I saw can come to pass. Is it going to be hard? Yes, it is. But will you have what it takes to get it done? We do. And so sometimes we play down our abilities and our capabilities all for the sake of sometimes maybe not making ourselves look like the people that we really are. And sometimes we just are superstars. And so in order to empower people, we got to build confidence in them. We got to let them know that they do have something to offer and that it's okay to say that you have what it takes and that you do have it going on. We want to be, you know, well, I'm a Christian and, you know, I got to be humble and, you know, I got to be modest, you know. But Paul says, not that I speak of my own authority, not that I speak of Paul, but I speak of the power that God has given me. It's not man that taught me these things. It's not man who placed this passion to spread God's word. It's not man that gave it to me. It's God. So I don't have anything to be ashamed of. If God has given something and placed a dream, a desire, a vision inside of me, I don't have anything to be ashamed of. No, I don't go out there and just boast and look at what I've done and then this and that, but I understand who I am. And so if I understand who I am, I can empower somebody else. And I can and be that candid person to say, hey, it's going to take hard work, and we're going to experience resistance because we're getting ready to climb up a hill that we've never experienced before. We're going to be going to unfamiliar territory, places that we've never been. And it can start out with one person, but I'm so convinced that other people will have that same passion, and that it will begin to spread like wildfire, and we'll mm-hmm. be able to talk to people about it. And so one of the things that I was thinking about, I was like, okay, well, economic recovery together. Oh, that is not an island of one. That means that there's going to be two, three or more people that's going to be a part of this ship. So how do we get there together? Well, one of the things that came to me, and I love the scripture, so I don't want to be like, oh, she's this holy roller, but I'm telling you the word, it changes lives, and it's, like, awesome. So, yes, I'm getting ready to go to Romans chapter 8, and basically it says, and we know that all things work together for the good to those who love God, to those who are the called according to his purpose. It says that all things work together. So if we know that all things work together, regardless of how I may feel about being inadequate or not being able to make it work because I don't have the expertise or the skill set or the education, his word says that all things work together. If I'm a believer, all things work together for the good to those who love him. I love him, so it's got to work out. It says according to his purpose. Well, if he's placed his purpose inside of you, it's got to work. The problem that we got to get over is staying stuck. Like I heard Joe Madison and one of the pastors from the church that I attend say that we get stuck in the moment instead of understanding that we're supposed to be in a movement. In a movement, it causes action. A moment, we're staying right there, just kind of hovering around like a helicopter over the land. We're not moving to the left or to the right. We ain't going up or down. We just hovering over, ain't doing nothing. Scared that if we move. But if we're going to go through economic recovery together, we got to know that if we got a plan, that it's going to work. It is going to work. It cannot fail. And then you have Ezekiel 37 when he was in the valley. And we know in that valley was full of bones. And sometimes a lot of us are in those valleys. We might be in a valley right now full of bones that are not put together. It's like a puzzle piece, like, I don't know, 5,000 puzzle pieces, and I don't do those. But what do you do when you're standing in the valley? You got to believe. You got to be able to hear. You got to be able to hear what's going on. And I know Feaster was talking about Facebook. Hey, I had to just turn Facebook off for a week so that I can hear. Because we can look at those bones to represent people who are misguided, who are walking in the wrong direction, who don't know where to go, who are standing at a crossroad right now. And if we don't put ourselves in a position to where we can hear from God, then those bones that are around us that represent a lot of where people are, that don't have a clue of how the plan that they have can work together for the good according to the purpose that God has given them, then we're doing them a disservice. And so I just really think that when you're standing in the valley of what we can call decisions that's full of bones, which represents people and sometimes where they're going, the best way that we can empower them and definitely be on that road to recovery is to say, it's going to start with me. I'm going to do something. And so I really like, Nate, when you talked about the programs. It took doing something. There's a lot of organizations that are already established. You know, you talked about giving the dollar. You know, at our church, we give dollars. We have people that come in from different organizations. We have Stella's Voice, which is an organization that give taking young boys and girls off of the streets in Moldova that's dealing with sex trafficking. These young teenage girls and boys that are orphans, when they turn 16 in Moldova, they're out on the streets as opposed to 18 years old in America when they turn out of the foster system. Our children here in America are blessed. So we can give to these programs, and I loved how you said, well, why are we giving overseas? You know, maybe that's the vision that God gave those people to work overseas, and so we definitely understand that we can support them. But what about these organizations that are right here in the United States of America, organizations like Convoy of Hope? I got the opportunity to hear this man, Hal Richardson, who lost his father in an accident when he was a little boy. Him and his parents, brothers and sisters, were supposed to be in that vehicle. And they turned around as the babysitter passed them, and they were hit by a car, and the father died instantly. And so he didn't know what to do, and a couple took them in for a couple of days until they, you know, however long they took them in, until they were able to get stabilized and to be back with their mom, who was, you know, I guess had maybe hit some hard times and lost her job or had to find work to do. So they stayed with this Christian couple. And this Christian couple shared the love of Jesus with them. And from that point on, this man, Hal, said, you know what, I got to do something. If somebody took the chance to take me and my family in, I can make a difference. And that difference started out with one Christian family sharing the love of Jesus with them by letting them stay in their house. I didn't say took them to church, gave them a Bible. But they shared the love of Jesus by saying, come and stay in our home. How many times do we have the ability to say, come and eat dinner with me today? Matter of fact, let's go out for lunch. And just to share the love of Jesus and to know that we're serving a purpose. It's so small. A lot of times we have big dreams, but God is saying, I want you to start small. Can you take your neighbor a plate of food? I know Feaster talked about that he gave some clothes away to a family member, and it was the right size, and it was what he needed. Can we say that right there is the start of a clothing shelter that Feaster, that God could have placed in his heart? Feaster, you got all clothes, and people are going to be able to give you clothes, and you can start a clothing shelter right out of your home to where you can just put bags of clothes together, different sizes, and just say, you know what, God bless me with these clothes, I'm going to be a blessing to somebody. That right there can be the start of how we empower other people. That's the team that can be started. But with the Convoy of Hope, this man said, I'm just going to go to the grocery store, I'm going to get some bags of groceries, put them in the back of my pickup truck, and I'm going to go to the roughest neighborhood, and I'm going to give them out to people that need it. That started the Convoy of Hope to where they have donated millions of dollars of food all over the world, not just out of the state, not just internationally, but right here in the United States of America. They've helped people with the Superstorm Sandy over in Colorado. So it just takes us just taking the dream that God has given us, that desire that he's purposed in our heart to say, you know what? These bones can live, and they can live because I'm the one person that's standing in the valley of decision, and I can impact this person by doing this. I can impact this person by doing this. Oh, and I just shared that I did this for this person, not even thinking anything about it. This person said, well, shoot, I got some clothes. I got some canned goods that I've been saving up and didn't really know what to do with them, don't have any room for them. I love to be able to give you some groceries so that, hey, matter of fact, how about this Saturday we can go out? That's how we empower people. We empower people by doing something. And so that's all that I really wanted to just share is just Romans 28, all things work together. It's by us working together with just one plan, one idea. What we're doing tonight is us working together for the call purpose that God has called us to, and that's sharing what God has given us with everybody to include ourselves on this phone and then taking it to the streets. I think Michael McDonald had this on, taking it to the streets. Who am I going to share this with next time? Who am I going to invite on the call next week? Who am I going to just say, you know what, I just talked to my neighbor, and I'm telling on myself, but I was late getting on the call, I was talking to my neighbor. Well, I just found a need that I can fill for her, and I'm going to do it. I don't know where that can take me. I don't know what doors that can open, but I am willing to believe and to stand that if we work together, that we can definitely serve a purpose and meet a need in somebody's life by knowing that we are the called according to God's purpose, and that's how we can empower people. And that's all pretty much I wanted to say.
I knew I had to bring it out of you because I already knew that it was already in you. So I'm thankful that you were able to give whatever was in you so that somebody can take it and run with it, just like God told Habakkuk about writing the vision and make it plain so that people will see it so that you can run with that vision. So I'm grateful that you were able to do it. And it's amazing also that when you first started talking to Dia that you were talking about Adia, and I mean, excuse me, talking about vision. And what is so amazing about that is what I've been writing the message about since early this morning was about vision. And here's the question. So I don't know when I'm going to preach it or teach it or whatever, but here's what's coming. What is the vision for your church?
Mm.
What is the vision for your church? That's about all I can give. I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know what it's going to sound like. I know it's going to be good because I know God has given it to me. The bottom line is, what is the vision for your church? So, Sister Dia, we know you got a lot of schoolwork and everything to do, so we thank you for holding on and being with us this evening. And, Brother Feaster, I want to come to you, brother, because I really want to hear whatever's on your mind, because we don't have to drag anything out. If there's anybody that would like to share anything before the show is concluded, because I'm almost out. I just have some final comments in a few minutes after I try to I'll find this one song as we get ready to close out the show. So, Brother Feaster, I'm going to come to you, unless Sister Adia, you have something before you go.
No, I'm good. I am going to switch over to my cell phone, and I'll still be listening.
All right. God bless you. We love you.
All right. Love you, too.
Brother Feaster?
Yes, sir. I actually sit here patiently waiting about 30, 45 minutes. It was something that you said that struck within me, and it was something that Adia said last week that all of it tied in together. And, well, I got convicted. I'm going to put myself out there. I got convicted. I've said for the past 2 to 3 weeks that I am not an active member of a church here in the city that I'm in. And I remember last week, Adia sent me an email, and she sent me a text, so obviously she wanted to make sure I got it. But she said that I am the church. and you know, it's funny how something so simple can be so profound. Something that you already know can be learned. And I was thinking about that last week, and then as you were telling your story, you're reading the article and talking about that community, and then even Adia, when she started talking about how I gave my clothes to my cousin, I really began to think about I am the church. Not the building that I go to, not the worship center that I attend, but I am. The person that is using this voice that you're listening to, I am the church. And when I say I am the church, I'm also saying the person that's listening to this voice, I am the church. Adia talked about Stella's voice. And one thing that she didn't mention about that organization was the last time they was at her church, one of the girls that was taken out of that abusive relationship, that lifestyle, said people would always come by and say, Jesus loves you. She said, but she used to ask the question, who is Jesus and what is love? And I have not forgotten that phrase, that those questions, because we take for granted two things in America. We take for granted that everyone knows Jesus. I remember a couple of years ago, I was talking to a lady, and she said, Jesus, I want you to teach me about the Bible. I want to know more, and I believe that you can teach me about the Bible. And the other lady next to me was kind of listening. There was a couple other people in there. And the lady said something. The lady said something to the extent of, I want to know, you know, about she asked something about the 12 disciples. And before I can say anything and explain it, the other lady looked and said, you don't know about the 12 disciples? And she just went off on the lady. And that was unfair to that lady simply because she didn't know anything about the 12 disciples. So she took that for granted that she knew about the 12 disciples. So we take for granted that everybody knows everything about the Bible. A lot of preachers get up and preach, and they say, you're familiar with this passage. Well, what about the person that's not? The other thing we take for granted is understanding love. We take that for granted because here in America, and I ain't even going to say here in America.
Let's bring it down. Here to where? Because, you know, once we keep, again, as we get so far off into this big picture, that's the same thing we were just talking about, Brother Feast, about the world hunger and feeding all those individuals outside of America. You know, until we bring it, narrow it down, we're still just talking. So bring it down to a place, if you can, about what is a specific location that you're talking about. You see what I'm saying? Because if the problem is so global, if the problem is so large, and we never start at a particular point, you know what it's like? I think my cousin Saeed said this to me one time, and let me go to this caller that's been waiting patiently after I say this. You can't heat an ocean. You can't heat an ocean. So let me go to this caller real quick, bro. We're going to come back to you because the conversation is like that tonight. So caller, last four, 1959, welcome to the PRS table once again.
Yes, great to be here. I mean, I think just looking back in history, you kind of had Malcolm X come out and tell you, you know, political power plus economic power defines a community's social condition. And so for me, you know, are we exhausted by what's happening in Washington, D.C.? Do we actually vote? Do we actually hold political candidates accountable when they're not representing our interests? Do we actually run for offices, whether it's local school committee or school board, to anything from mayor to state senator to governor? Are we using our political power? And I think that the answer is no. I think the plus is then economic power, which is how do we spend our economic power? I think most of us have no idea what organizations we're supporting when we purchase, whether the consumable is television or it's jeans or it's something or it's a car. I think we have no idea because we're so caught up in following kind of the Joneses or the Johnsons or whomever. And so do we exercise economic power? My friend who's Vietnamese, you know, talked about when she came into the community, not speaking English, having come from a war-torn part of the part of her country, that there were other Vietnamese there to provide she and her family with a home until they could get on their feet. There was a collective because they knew they would never get loans from traditional white-owned banks and white-led banks, so they put a collective of funds together that people could borrow from, start local businesses. The local community would then patron those businesses, and then they would pay back their loans with a slight interest, and they would do that over and over because they trusted one another, and they knew that you needed economic power if you were not to beg for jobs in this country, but actually to create jobs in your community and create jobs that will allow you to sustain yourself, get on your feet. And do we have that level of trust within our community? I think that we, with all due respect to the all the donations, I think we have no idea what it takes. And it's, well, I think we know. I just think we don't care, and we're not willing to do it. And Frederick Douglass said it over 150 years ago, that the price of freedom is death. And if you said, raise your hand if you're willing to pay the price for freedom for our people, I think you would see a lot of people with their hands in their pockets, maybe willing to not give a dollar but give $20, but they sure as hell are not going to give their lives to sacrifice. And I think it's a disgrace to the folks who walked in the Montgomery bus boycott. I think it's a disgrace to the to Harriet Tubman and all those who use their arms and legs to be the vehicle of God to fight for freedom. And so I think that we've kind of lowered our expectations about what we're willing to do for freedom. And so the conversation, the vehicle, the pathway out, to me, is very clear. But the resolve, the maturity, the actual love of our community enough to do it is at least currently something it seems like we're not willing to do from my perspective.
You make some, my brother, you make some very good points. And, you know, that reminds me of a time when the first black-owned bank in recent years, I would say, it may have been here years and years ago, but the first black-owned bank in Columbus, Georgia, or a black-owned bank came to Columbus, Georgia, and it took 3,000 signatures for the bank to actually have enough momentum to actually come to this area. And the amount of African-Americans, black folk, that actually did not support the bank because they did not trust, and that's a mindset. That speaks to what you're talking about. If you're scared to put your money into a black-owned bank, but you'll put your money into a white-owned bank very, very quickly, something is wrong with that picture. If you're black, something is wrong with the community structure as well. So there's some things that we just have to do. And if we're not willing to do them, I agree wholeheartedly with our caller. If we're not willing to do them, I agree with my caller, and I agree with Brother Feaster last week, or the week, and Sister Adia the week before that. What right do we have to say about anything? So let me go to this next caller with the last 46490. Welcome to the PRF table.
Hello, how you doing? How y'all doing tonight?
We're good. We're good.
I'd like to speak on what the gentleman just now said, and what you said about the whole mindset. For our people, it really goes back to the slavery time. When you look at our people don't know about the Willie Lynch letters, how that whole incident right there with those letters, it just started a whole chain reaction with our people of how just fighting against one another, pitting one against another, the male against the female, young against old, light against dark, all of that. It became a mindset with our people. You even look now, it goes back to the whole crabs in a bucket type mindset, where if one of us get too high, then somebody from where we came from may look at it and be like, oh, he too good because such and such, you know, because he got to this point. But I think for us as a people to really go forward, like the gentleman said, is to look back on our past, like Frederick Douglass and Harriet Tubman, and even to show our kids to not be afraid, to show them the Willie Lynch letters and say, hey, this is something that has been instilled mentally, genetically in our people for years, and this is kind of why we act like this. It's not because we don't have to, but this is kind of what has been instilled in us over the years, and this is kind of why we act, and this is how you should not act, and this is how you should act accordingly so we can get to where we need to be as a people.
All right. We thank you, my brother. Thank you for those comments. Brother Feaster, I'm going to go ahead and let you get this last second part of your point that you were trying to communicate to us, if you're still with us. Go ahead, bro.
Yeah, what I was getting at when I said we don't understand love, and as you made your comments, it struck me again. You said bring it home. Well, the city I'm in has the last statistic I heard was a 19% homeless population, and you know, well, let's make it easy. Adia said the man just invited them into his house. That's all they did and took care of. That's showing love. But if that love has never been shown, then people don't understand what love is. And so that is going to be the change for everything and for everyone. Not just to say, I love and I will, but to do. One of the cliches that I love to say is actions speak louder than words. There's a parable in the Bible where the man was beat half to death, and the religious leaders walked by and looked at him. Two different religious leaders walked by and looked at him. One guy stopped and even made an assessment of the situation. But it was somebody that wasn't affiliated with the church, wasn't affiliated with that particular person, that particular so-called denomination, that not only picked the person up, took them to the hotel, left some money there, and then in our days and time, left a credit card there to take care of any bills that would be accumulated while the person stayed there. And that person never said, I love you. Never, in that scripture, no word said that I love you, but the actions did. So what I was challenged with tonight and what I want to challenge everyone with is don't say it, do it. Don't speak it, live it. And that's what's going to make the change. That's how we're going to prepare ourselves for when this happens again. And like the caller said, and I like that, have we gone to the polls? Have we looked at who our city officials are? Do we know when the next elections are? That's how we make the change. Not just sit back waiting on the change, but that's how we make the change. And that's my final comment, JR.
Thank you, my brother. And let me tell you where I'm believing that we're going to, well, I'm not even going to say it. Just come back next week, and you'll see where we're going to be, because our first caller said something very, very key about the level of trust, which I think is important on this road to economic recovery, and on this thing about doing it together. There has to be a level of trust that exists among the leaders and among the people. And what our caller said which struck me was about where our dollars are going. So I'm about done. We're about done. We're about to sign off for the evening. But I'm going to challenge everybody to go on the Internet or go on a Facebook page. I'll post it after the show, possessions.resources.finances. And I'm going to post a YouTube clip of a group called Sweet Honey and the Rock. And that's going to probably start our conversation off next week. But again, tonight we're talking about what can you do? What is it that you can do to help on this road to economic recovery? And this is where I'm just going to leave it. There are too many churches in our community for us not to be the type of godly, Holy Spirit-led forces that we're capable or more capable of being. There's too many nonprofit organizations in our community for us not to be partnering with individuals and with groups that are there to do some of the same thing that we have failed or neglected to do as the church in my community. So there's some questions I think that somebody should be able to answer. You who are church folk, you who are Christians that are attending church, part of ministries, leading ministries, whatever. Something real simple, because we have to start pinpointing down and narrowing the focus down to what's going on right around me. What if somebody comes to you and says, they have a problem and they need some help with some groceries. What is that? When you take this time throughout this next week, find out where the place where you can send somebody, even if it's not your church or your own ministry, where they can go and get some food that can tie them over to a payday or for a week or whatever the case is. If somebody just comes here and they need to go to a homeless shelter, can you identify and provide that information to somebody about where the homeless shelter is? All of those questions, you have to just start asking yourself some of these questions in order to get to some of the answers that's going on in your community. And I like what Sister Adia said. We got to take this thing to the streets. We have to take it to the streets, because if we don't take it to the streets, we're only doing it something inside of the four walls. And I'm not saying everybody's doing that, because y'all know I don't like this we thing. I know what I see in my community. And there's some people and some churches and some organizations doing some great things in my community. But in the big scheme of things, in my community, there's some things that are lacking. So we have to be willing to address those particular things. So as we get ready to close out the show for tonight, again, we love you. Come back and visit with us. Sit down at the table with us next Thursday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Go onto our Facebook page. We definitely love for conversation to get going on the Facebook page. It helps us to think. It helps God to be able to provide stuff inside of us to be able to address your questions and your concerns. If nobody else was listening, know that those of us on the PRF table is listening. So with that, God bless you. We love you. We will see you next week, Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the PRF table. Have a wonderful evening.